This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Frida Liu here. The folks from Digital News Asia, Chong Jin Seong, Kiranjit Kaur, and Karamjit Singh. Of course, this is where we talk about what's been happening in the tech space. I will start with you, Jin. This is Level Up KL 2018. It wrapped up earlier this week with record-breaking levels of attendance. Over 90 companies from the region participating in the exhibition this year. So I presume you also had some fun.
Yes. Actually, it just ended just yesterday. Mm. So it was a 5-day, or 5 or 6-day event.
Quite extravaganza.
But they've been doing this for about, this is their
fourth or fifth year
already. Mm. So this year, as you said, like, there's quite a lot of people. They certainly are on track to bringing this to a regional level. So I think, of course, Dr. Yasmin Mahmood was there and from MDEC, and she was talking about how MDEC's efforts in growing Level Up KL to be, to raise greater awareness and showing that it's a valid gaming industry market within Southeast Asia is quite true. Yep. They've brought in a lot of panel of experts from the region for this show. In fact, they grew it to most conferences have two tracks. They had five tracks.
Wow.
So there's definitely a breadth of different topics from education to independent startups, those independent game studios that are smaller. There are some that are industry news. So I picked out a few. There were some good topics around. There were some by a market research company called Nico Partners, and they outlined how Southeast Asia is a really booming market for esports. So it's a pretty big topic. In fact, the youth and sports minister was there earlier last night at Said Sadiq. Mm. So he was a bit late, but nevertheless, he turned up. I'm sure he did speak about esports during this really big momentous occasion
Were all the five tracks well attended?
I think it's a mixture. I didn't actually get to go into all of them, but I could see actually there's a lot of excitement around on the floor. There were a lot of people around. In fact, even there was a panel on women in games as well. Mm. And one of the panelists there was Fakra Al-Mansouri. She's a CEO of a company called Hybrid Humans from UAE, I believe. And she commented that from where she's from, at least from the UAE, it was refreshing for her to see that so many women around in the games industry, like, and they did highlight, you know, the challenges that they faced initially at first, and some of how they have to overcome the typical stereotypes you find in any industry. Mm. It's also present within the game industry as well. Right. But apart from that, also they also recognized they had an awards night last night as well. Uh-huh. This was for the Southeast Asia Game Awards. This is the second time they're holding it. Last year was the inaugural Game Awards. So this time round, they recognized several studios from around the region. The grand jury winner was Metronomics he is this person by the name of Wan Hasmir. We spoke to him a bit before. He has run a studio called Metronomics, and his game No Straight Roads won the grand jury awards. Mm. There was also a Singaporean studio by the name of Joy Steak Studios. Joy as in joy and steak. Like the
steak.
Yeah, steak. Meat steak. Steak. Weird.
Joy Steak.
With another game. And also, there are a couple of other, they had a lot of different awards that were awarded out during the night. And I think it was really good to see that everyone's really excited.
When
it was kind of like a mini Academy Awards. So you get the nominees and stuff, and everyone was clearly excited to see whether this studio or that studio was going to get it. And it's really a coming together of many Southeast Asian game developers. So no one's really rooting, oh, this is my country, I only want to cheer for them. It's everybody's oh, this is a really interesting studio, I want to support them.
I know maybe you don't have the answer for it, but from the five tracks, I know you didn't attend all of it, but was there a particular one that more people were attending? I'm just trying to get a gauge of what people are interested in the game space.
I think some of them are at least the two notable ones I noted was like Nikko Partners, so the market research company.
Right.
A lot of people were really interested to find out like what
the data points,
points and insights like that. So there were some people from Mediafirma as well. They also like taking notes down like, okay, this is what you should look out for. The other one, of course, was the Women in Games as well.
Okay.
So that was really well attended. I found these two like the best attended. There were some middling topics and stuff like that, but you know, of any conference, you have good and not so interesting topics as well. But these two stuck out to me.
Right. So like the feel on the ground, what people are interested. There was an MOU that was signed.
Yes. There were several MOUs signed. So one was with iCandy. They recently launched this Crypto Crab games, Krypton Crabs.
Yeah, we talked about it
before. So they are interested in investing into blockchain companies. So game developers who want to leverage on blockchain. So they are willing to pump money into interested companies. So I did speak to further discussion with their CEO, Chief Operating Officer Desmond Lee, and he spoke about how at length this is just an extension of what they are already doing currently, which is supporting game studios. Though interestingly, he did say that he has not invested in any local studios, but he's invested in an Indonesian studio already this year. Mm. He says that the local studio scene, to him, hasn't met the standards that he has set out, but he is hoping that after the Game Awards, hopefully they will highlight some of the good local studios that potentially he may want to look into.
Yeah. And by the way, Desmond Frieda used to run his own independent studio in Malaysia also, because before he was acquired by iCandy. So
yes.
Right. See how the industry moves, right? Mm. You're an independent, then a bigger guy comes and say, hey, fantastic, we like what you're doing. You know, we're going to take a stake in your business. And how you move and develop the ecosystem.
Right. Mm. So, let's move from the gaming sector to a startup story, selling flowers online.
Yes.
Right? And that's not something new. In fact,
there are over
a dozen to choose from in Malaysia, but German duo Maximilian Lotz and Niklas Frasser are now taking Flower Chimp on the path to regional expansion. So you're talking about flowers.
It's flowers. It's a flowery Thursday, I would say. but in actual fact, I don't know how many of the other local... Yes, they are not new in doing this... selling flowers online. I did ask him that. You know,
what's the difference?
How many of them actually have gone? But how many of them have actually gone to nationwide already and in multiple countries already?
Yeah.
I think that, to me, I think that's quite impressive. And they managed to do it within a year even. So
who funded them to do this though? You cannot be based on cash flow only.
So the initial they were actually funded $1.4 million by Asia Venture Group. I think it was sometime. Not in the first few years of their existence, actually, but they grew really well. They actually had a stroke of luck when they launched, because they launched close to Mother's Day.
Okay.
So there are like several key events that normally happen around this time period. So like they leveraged on some of them. But at the same time, they were also not going to sit on their laurels, you know, like we are not going to like they were not just going to rely on festive seasons and all these other flower giving
few and far between.
But they expanded their network of partners and as you looking,
I'm going to the website because flowers
website.
You know?
So I mean they have they leverage on a very wide network of partners, so they don't rely on their own fleet of delivery services.
Okay.
So like it could be a florist in some other state and they are selling flower chimps different arrangements and stuff like that. So like they are like as you see, that's what the Trinity box set,
the
which is
with flowers and chocolates.
Flowers
lovely
and chocolates for the special persons in their life. Interestingly also,
you can send to yourself really.
But the guys actually had the misconception that they initially made this thinking that more guys would be buying on their website, because maybe I forgot someone's birthday or it's an anniversary. So they thought they can do this. Correct. So you can do a same day delivery by 1 p.m.
So there is no because if they're working with different people, there is no standard in terms of delivery, like how fast they can. I mean, you know, like how we'll be able to deliver in 3 hours, 6 hours. Yeah. There's it depends on the individual florist.
I believe that they are, for what they described to me, quality control is the utmost importance. Mm. At least. It didn't go in detail on the delivery time, but the quality of the flowers, I think they mentioned that they really vet their partners and make sure that they follow SOPs. So I don't think it's too far off to say that you know, the delivery times also have to be, you know, according tight, to that, yeah. That's really tight, la. So long as you make a request before a certain time, before 1 p.m., mm-hmm. they should be able to get the flowers within the same day.
Wow,
at least
that's fast,
that's their guarantee, at least. Mm.
Okay, I mean, and that's important, right? Because you can be online, and yet, because I ordered a pair of shoes, as I would. And that was over 2 weeks ago, and it was online. So while you're available online, you can't deliver on time. Mm. That completely, you know, but what's the point? Because you usually, because it's nice to be, you know, change on the front, but you, at the end of the day, it's how fast can you
deliver?
But
you still have to understand that shoes and flowers are totally different. Flowers have a limited lifespan, so they are very time sensitive.
If I need my shoes now, but 2 weeks is too long.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's too long
in this day and age. Yeah,
right. So anyway, this is exciting. I've just gone online. They're very interesting, but we'll see how that will come to
and
play.
How they expand regionally, right? And raise more money for them to have raised almost $1.5 million US.
Mm. Okay, we'll talk about other things other than flowers after this. Chong Jin Seong, Kiranjit Kaur and Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. Stay tuned to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fantastic, Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Frida Liu here. If you've just joined us, digitalnewsasia.com, here with me, Chong Jin Seong, Kiranjit Kaur and Karamjit Singh. We've been talking about the tech space. We talked about Level Up KL earlier on, Flower Chimp with their flowers. And of course, there's another very interesting story that you've got, Jin, here. Mm-hmm. And hopefully people not blowing their budget by buying flowers. This is Ringgit Plus survey. It highlights shockingly low financial literacy rate among Malaysians. And of course, we had the earlier on the Ringgit and Sense show, and 30% of respondents did not have enough money to last them even a month.
Yeah, it's quite shocking. Mm-hmm. Actually, they did this survey. Genexo, which is the holding company of Ringgit Plus, their CEO, Siu Yuen Tuck, actually mentioned that the reason behind why they did this survey was to gain a deeper understanding of how Malaysians are actually managing their money. Unfortunately, of course, from what you read just now, it doesn't seem really great. They did this survey earlier in October this year. Mm. Earlier last month, in October,
right,
with almost 3,000 respondents, and that those 3,000 respondents on the website.
We
just
don't know the
age
category. Did we get that?
I think it was a wide one from, you know, 18, the typical 18 to 60 over. They didn't quite give the age range, but I think it's safe to say it's quite anyone who has an internet connection, who is familiar with fintech and looking for financial products, will be visiting a website. And those are typically the people who are most active there, and where those numbers are coming from, very likely. But they didn't specify specifically the age group. But yeah, it'd be interesting. I think there should have been a point we should have brought up with them. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it is shocking to see that actually Malaysians many are not saving enough even. So like one of the other stuff is that Malaysians are just not saving less than 500 even in a month. Oh,
okay, and that's because probably they don't have enough to save.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
And on the back of the Khazanah report, right? There was an earlier release as well. So, I mean, yeah, it's quite worrying. But of course, I mean, they are talking about how people are leaving money on the table because they don't really find really great financial products, or they're not educated on how to manage their debt. Mm. So Ringgit Plus is also working with Media Prima as well. So they're launching a new show called Ringgit Sense Plus. So that's premiering.
Sounds like our show. Go on.
Kind of. True as well. Mm-hmm. So they are trying to educate the general population on that with topics surrounding finance and I'm sure fintech as well.
Okay, we move on to Kieran. Kieran also very busy, yeah, work to do. Your first pick is on the Petronas Group ICT Forum 2018, happened last week. The event showcased Petronas Digital Solutions and explored digital transformations taking place around the world. There was a panel with, what's his name? Karamjit Singh, as the moderator. And the panelists included was Amran Hassan, Head of Innovation Maybank, Mohan Seka, Senior MD and Lead Advanced Technology Centre in Accenture India, and Shahrizal Yang Razali, Head Executive VP and CEO's Downstream Office at Petronas. And the topic was on why innovation matters more than ever. So I don't know who wants to talk first. Karam wants to talk, or can you talk? You talk.
So Shahrizal Yang Razali, he started off by saying that the market trends right now Demand for petroleum products is flattish and may even contract over time. So that's quite a scary thing for a company like Petronas. So it's saying demand could potentially even dwindle as, you know, our car engines become more efficient, they require less fuel, and also you have hybrid and electric vehicles coming about. So for a company like Petronas, I guess they really have to transform and transform fast. And in the panel session, they talked about, I think Karam asked them all a question, how is innovation being driven in your company and what is driving it? Is it internally driven by your internal pain points or is it driven by the external market?
Yeah.
And for Petronas, he said it was both. So as he mentioned, the market trends and internally also, he says they are not changing fast enough. And for Maybank, Amran Hassan, he's the head of innovation in Maybank. He mentioned, he was very blunt, in fact. He said that, he said this, the cold hard truth that is not so sexy about innovation is that it is heavily dependent on how the bank can reap more revenue. So even though it's customer focused, they still, the main idea behind it is to, you know, cut cost or reap more revenue. So he says that even when we look at innovation, there is a line of sight between these two objectives, cutting cost and gaining more revenue. If there is an internal pain point that causes our staff to be unhappy, for example, but solving it does not reduce cost or increase revenue, we don't do it. Which I think is a little bit risky in the long term, because in a sense, you could even it could even be a time saving, which could lead to a cost saving in the long term, you see. So that was one point there. And as for Accenture, I guess for them, it's not so much their digital transformation, but how they help companies out there transform. So many companies reach out to them to, in fact, they consult basically and ask, what can we do? And a lot of these clients come to them and they are all out to follow what other companies out there are doing, which might not always be the best thing to do. Because they're really clueless as to what to do. So they think they just need to follow suit with the trends out there. And he says that with so much of hype and technological transformation, our clients are confused and they don't really understand what we need to do.
Interesting.
And a lot of times when he asks these organizations, who is the main innovator in your company, they all point to IT. And he says that is completely wrong.
Yeah, dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, with the way the world is changing, it cannot be like that. You cannot outsource it. It has to be a cultural change throughout. And very interesting also, Karam asked them this question about their digital mindset, how they would rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. Accenture rated theirs at a 7. But he said it was not an easy journey for them. It was a lot of heavy lifting. And what really drove them to that 7 was the paranoia of being left behind. And he also said that they had an advantage over a lot of others out there because theirs is a technical workforce and they are very technologically inclined.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is the advantage they had. But it was not easy for them too. So for a company like Accenture to admit that it wasn't easy for them, you can imagine how much tougher it would be on other companies. And Maybank, Amran, he rated theirs at a 4.5.
Okay.
But he said it's not really the digital mindset that's the problem. Like the employees within the company, when they first announced that they wanted to transform and all that, all the employees were really, really on board and excited. They were all ready to take this on and they were all suggesting all these ideas and all that. But what is restrictive in a way is the structure within the bank. So when a new idea comes about, you have to present it, I think, go through so many layers of what, and then you have your budget approvals also, which takes a really, really long time. I think the timeline he gave was, what, 1 year, and a half years?
Yeah.
When your product or your idea will finally materialize. So that was really long. But how they are now
changing
it.
They have shortened that now, yeah.
They've shortened that. So now they're taking a more proactive approach, a more tactical approach. So the CEO of Maybank, Abdul Farid Alias. So if he sees an idea that he thinks, okay, this is really good and this will really make a difference to the bank, he oversees it directly and sees the idea through. So that's what they're doing.
Okay. Very interesting. So, and then you also had another launch, Asia Pacific University Cybersecurity Talent Zone, earlier in October. $1.9 million in being invested here with certification to create more cybersecurity talent.
Yep. So this is in APIT University, APU, sorry, Asia Pacific University. And a very interesting, Paramjit, the founder, he said employability rate of cybersecurity graduates is at 300%, with each of their graduating cohorts being employed even before they graduate. So this creates like a huge vacuum in the industry, and there's a huge need for cybersecurity graduates in our country. And I think APU, they have an intake of 50% international students, 50% local students. But for this particular program, they've skewed it a little bit. So there's an intake of, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 70% local and only 30% international, because this is to really, really address the shortage that we have in our country.
Yeah.
And yeah, so they had an initial, and this is only an initial investment of 7 to 8 million in the cybersecurity talent zone, which is this is actually a very advanced space, I would say, and they had a lot of industry partnerships too. One is with PGI Limited from UK to scale up and certify the staff and students. And he said this is not an easy certification to do, to put them through. So it's really great that APU has this. They also have industry partnership with Tech Forte and Darren Berhad and Cyber Test Systems from France. So it's a really good
space. Okay. So, and there's something very interesting. Then you went to the launch of the Sunway iLabs Makerspace. Professor Virginia Cha talked about entrepreneurs should think of the replacement cost of resources used, not just extraction cost.
Yeah. Okay, so this was, yes, at the Makerspace launch. And so Virginia, Professor Virginia Cha, she comes from INSEAD in Singapore. And yes, she is very, very, listening to her speak, it's very clear that she's very, very passionate about the environment. She is vegan or vegetarian, I can't remember. But she's just very, very passionate about helping the environment. And that is what drove her to do this research. And one example, when she gave this talk, she put up this picture of bikes lying in a pile.
All right.
So this was from a bike sharing company. They wanted to expand really fast. They got investment and they expanded really fast. They sent out all these bikes all over and it ended up in a lot of wastage. So she said that, you know, we see venture capitalists and entrepreneurs chasing after wealth and all these market share, but you don't really think of how this results in wastage. So he says that each bike is still made of minerals and iron resources, which we extract from the earth. So when we pay for something, we don't really think about the cost of extraction. Okay, maybe we're paying for the cost of extraction, but not for the cost of replacement. He said if we actually think about the cost of replacement when we consume goods, we would actually consume things very differently.
It would be a lot more expensive if you take the cost of replacement.
Correct. And I guess we would also consume less and consume smarter. Yeah. And her model, so she's come up with a model of how to innovate for good. And she gave the example actually of food and how organic food is a lot more expensive, 5 times more expensive than our mass-produced food. And she said that she went to, I can't remember what country, and she visited a farm. And this farmer has no money to even use pesticides for his products. So his product is actually as organic as you can find. But it just doesn't have that stamp that says it's organic. And when it goes to market, the pricing of his compared to something that is labeled organic is a lot less.
Cheaper, yeah.
Yeah. And so she gave the example of that. And she mentioned that how do we actually innovate for greater good? So she said this has to start from a very, very low level. I'll go through that first. But how her model actually started was, so if you're going to disrupt the environment, what you are doing is you're starting with a very low cost. So let's say you introduce technology, you're actually looking at reducing cost fast by disrupting with technology. So it starts off with lower costs immediately. But with something like organic goods, you're starting with really, really high costs. What you really need to do is to drive demand to make the costs go down. But how do you actually drive demand for something like organic food? So she has invested in this company. This is only one example.
Oh, she invested herself.
Correct. She has invested in
a few,
I believe.
Put your money where the mouth is.
Yes, she's invested in a few, but this was one that she mentioned. It's called the New Luncher. Mm-hmm. And what the New Luncher does, it started by this lady that works from home for her as a housewife. Mm. She cooks her own meals and all that with very good ingredients, very little oil, and she gives it to school children. So she said, by teaching children now itself how to eat good food, and what will happen is when they grow up, they will demand for this kind of food because that's what their palate demands.
But I think the problem with that is when you say teach children, right? The kids are getting the food and they're just wolfing it down. Mm. Is anyone really telling them, look, this meal is made with less oil or with corn oil?
But that's what they're tasting. And that's what at the end of the day, they will want.
Okay.
That's what she's trying to say.
Yeah. So a lot of things is, technology, greatest enabler. It's like our pasatani or the farmer's market. We can encourage, instead of going to the supermarket and going to the closest one, if we have more of these, then that will also help change the palate. So the farmer's market probably won't have the certification that's organic, you know that the farmers have actually grown them and you're supporting that. That's one way. And, it's very interesting when you talk about replacement costs and extraction and all that. Here in this, the challenge with this country, we don't have a maintenance cost. You know, we built, and then we don't know how to maintain things, right? And that, to me, is the bigger issue, that we don't have a maintenance
that's a huge cost there.
And then, so what we do, buy another one.
Exactly.
Right? And that's the challenge with this country. Yeah. Anyway. Oh, they're different. So I just want to move on as well, right? At the makerspace, they also have 3D printers, robotics, VR and AR. What they're trying to promote, design thinking, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. So this was started by Sunway iLabs. Sunway iLabs is an incubator and I suppose they have an accelerator running under them as well. Now they've opened up a new space called the Sunway iLabs Makerspace, which is located within Sunway University itself at the ground floor. And it has a capacity of 50 students and it's equipped with
50 students, 50 individuals. It's open for entrepreneurs also. Just exclusive for students.
Yeah. So it's equipped with laser cutters, 3D printers, electronic gadgets. They have tools to build virtual reality, augmented reality, artificial intelligence, and robotics. And they also have the intention to expand later on to introduce woodwork, fashion, and that sort of thing. And they have lots of industry partnerships too. Google, General Electric, NEC Corporation, Hitachi, Experanti. So one of the questions I asked Matt Van Leeuwen, he's the director of iLabs, was, so you have this space right now, but how do you ensure that the space is being utilized? It's not enough to just have the space and, not have activities to basically drive design thinking forward. And he mentioned that they had this thing called, I think this is a regular thing, but one of the initiatives that they had was the Make It Challenge. Mm-hmm. So they gave students a problem statement experienced by the Sunway Group. So they sourced these problem statements from the employees within the Sunway Group and gave it to the students and said, look, how can you solve this problem? So these students had to think and find a way to solve these problems. And I think one of the kids, one of the teams came up with this thing of how to clean the drain and make sure there is no bad smell. Mm. So they're actually going to test that out in Sunway City itself. So he's hoping that it will, from this makerspace, Sunway City will eventually become a test bit for their innovations.
Okay, we'll continue with other stories after this. I'm here with Chong Jin Seong, Kiranjit Kaur, and Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. Stay tuned to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Blimey, football madness on BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning, Frida Liu here. The folks from Digital News Asia, Chong Jin Seong, Kiranjit Kaur, and Karamjit Singh, giving me a lot of roundup in the tech space. Which is good. What do you have for us, Karam?
I guess reading this, because we've got a fantastic interview with Dr. Siva, right? Talking about the importance of venture capital, right? Further fueling venture capital. But before that, there are really two articles that you maybe want to read this week. One was written last week on Sunday, which is my week in review. And I spoke about the Coach and Go program, right, which is a government-funded intervention that I said hits the sweet spot. And why do I say that? Because I spoke to Renoka, and most of the almost all the entrepreneurs they help Frida are actually, by definition, SMEs. And, you know, the government is trying to get SMEs to use technology smarter so they become more competitive, right? So I said, hey, this is really good. And what Renoka discovered in this just graduating cohort was that the mentorship model that they use actually cuts across industries. Because for the first time, they had brick-and-mortar companies participating. And she said that, hey, we found that the way we were teaching previously, the technology companies also works with brick-and-mortar companies because their approach to solving problems, Frida, is business driven. Mm. It's not technology driven. Hey, this is a great technology. I'm sure you can, you know, squeeze and force fit it into your problem, right? No. It's a business driven approach, so it works very well. And it also helps because the SME Corp just released the annual report, and there was a survey done of 2,033 SMEs together with Huawei. Mm. And I should talk about that next month. Mm. And they said that there's a high degree of computerization among our SMEs in Malaysia, but they struggle to cross the chasm to digitalization. Mm. And that needs to be done. And that's why I said, hey, actually what Renoka and Cradle and Ministry of Finance, because it's funded by Ministry of Finance, which is one of the best single bang for buck they can do in a program, right? Mm-hmm. Is this program, and it hits the sweet spot. So really read that article, it's great. And then there's another one which I just wrote and published at 3 a.m. this morning, which shouldn't have been that late. But this is Chan Kok Long, the co-founder of IP88. I think he issued a press release 2 days ago. It's well carried by the media because he said, don't introduce a digital tax right now. It's not the right time because all our digital economy companies are not ready. They're still trying to get profitability, and you hit them at a flat tax, no good.
Right.
But Singapore introduced it, but Singapore announced it, and it goes into effect in January, Frida, of 2020,
right,
not now.
Right.
He's saying, look, you want to introduce a tax based on profitability, by all means, right? But don't issue this across-the-board tax. Mm. And he says that it comes at the wrong time and it's going to hinder innovation. Because at worst case, and I think he's exaggerating maybe, he thinks if you introduce this, a lot of startups will maybe move out of the country. I don't think that'll happen unless the tax is like 8-10%, which won't be that high. I hope there's no digital tax right now. It's not the right time for 2019. And then but he says the incentives should be given for companies building digital ecosystem. And he says, he makes the point, last point about this, that you should have a separate ministry for the science and technology space. You said have a separate ministry for that. I say, why? Isn't Yobin's ministry in the portfolio? He says, Karamjit, you know, you create so many unicorns and multi-billion dollar companies from this space. It's important enough that you must have a ministry just focusing on science and technology. Mm. And a lot of good hiblis can come out of that. Because Yobin's got climate change, got environment, right? It's just so much on a lap. So just read that article. It's pretty good. And, you know, you'll do well for the week ahead.
Okay. And it's, you know, the digital tax right now is just going to not help, you know, as we're trying to, you know, be this digital hub for everything.
You must put innovation and risk taking, right? And, and very hardly anyone is making money. Of course, IP8 is making money. They're 10 years old.
Yeah.
But he's saying don't announce it now. Don't issue it now.
Yeah.
Launch it now. And, you know, the money you're going to make is very minimal. He said you can tax the global companies which are coming in, your Facebooks, which are already here. Tax them by all means, guys. Leave the local ecosystem alone first.
We'll see what happens. Budget, I think, is happening tomorrow, right?
5 o'clock. Yeah.
Okay, now you recently also had a chat with Dr. Siva Palan of MBAT, and in his hat, the Malaysian Business Angels Network. And this was to talk about a second part article that's published in Digital Asia. You want to put the preface before I go?
So just very quickly, Siva wrote a two-part article. One was about the challenges in our tech ecosystem from a funding point of view. He gave 10 points, and I think maybe inspired by P. Gunasegaran, right, who always said this, you know, 10 things. And then second article was what he suggests about what should be done to accelerate the funding ecosystem. Mm. And just quickly, Frida, tomorrow at DNA is doing a Facebook Live talk on the budget, you know, in terms of how it impacts the digital economy. So catch that through our Facebook page, right, at 5:15 p.m. right after the budget.
Okay, thanks for being with us. So we're going to close off that interview with Dr. Siva. But before that, Chong Jin Seung, Karenjit Kaur, and Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. This is Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
So, okay, Siva, welcome to the show again after a long hiatus.
Thank you, Karam.
It took that long for you to lick your wounds after the last debate we had. But of course, this is not a debate. This actually, you've written a fantastic two-part article on, you know, the ins and outs of the Malaysian venture capital ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your first part was you give 10 pointers about what ails the industry.
Right.
and a sector lah. And the second part was about, you know, your suggestions, right? So of course it's way too many for you to share on air now, but do share from the first part, Siva. Maybe the top three, you know, issues that really, you know, ail the industry that drag it down.
Okay, well, you know, the reason I really wrote this article is because the venture capital industry in Malaysia has been struggling for quite a long time, right?
Okay.
We haven't had many success stories, even among the venture capital industry. There is just too little money available in the venture capital industry. Now, if venture capital does not work in Malaysia, entrepreneurship will not work in Malaysia. So entrepreneurs will struggle to get funding, right? So if you look at the whole...
I mean, if you say that, I would disagree if you know, because money is around, right? It's just across the border, and that money also comes here seeking good ideas. So... To say that sounds very insular. Some listeners would be thinking the same way. So, what do you say to that then? Right?
When you look at funds available outside Malaysia, it's primarily from Singapore, right?
Yeah. Yes, foreign funds are based out of Singapore.
Correct.
Only,
foreign
right?
funds
the corporate
based
structure. Yes.
Foreign funds based in Singapore, including Singapore government-based funds as well, right? Yes, there is money in Singapore. But the Singaporean funds look at the whole region to invest in. They don't just look at Singapore or Malaysia. But if in your home country, right, you don't have enough funding to support your own homegrown ventures, and you are depending on a foreign foreign companies, foreign VCs
to see the value,
that's not going to be good, right? And how many companies can those VCs fund?
Yes, of
plus
course.
A lot of Singapore-based VCs are funding at a much later stages, Series B,
bigger
Series
amounts,
C
yes.
onwards, bigger amounts. What's really missing in Malaysia is funding at the earlier stages in terms of venture capital. For example, Series A onwards, Series A, Series B. Yeah. Anything from 1 million to 5 million for Series A, 5 to 15, 20 million in Series B.
Yes.
That's really not available in Malaysia, right? There are very few organizations that do that. At the early stages, you have grants like Cradle Grants. You have angels that provide the funding. But, you know, if all of us do this and then there is no money for them to grow to the next level with Series A or Series B funding, you're going to find a lot of companies not growing. And actually, over the last 20 years that I've been involved in the ecosystem...
Two decades.
That's actually what has happened, right? You don't see many companies in Malaysia having revenue above 5 million.
Yeah.
You don't see many companies in Malaysia that have gone
tech
and become global companies.
Right?
Non-tech as well, right?
Okay. Right?
But you don't see many that have gone out there and become global or regional companies.
Yeah.
And one reason for that is because of lack of funding. Because you can't get bank funding for technology companies. They need 3-year track record and stuff
absolutely.
Like that, right? Loans are also harder to get
of course,
because of all
collateral.
Of that. So the only one that's available really is venture capital
risk
funding.
Capital.
And
okay.
that's really not available. So if there aren't enough funds, you are not able to grow all these companies, right? So the first thing is there's a shortage of funds.
Yeah,
secondly,
okay.
even the funds that are there in Malaysia are all very small. Many of the VC funds are like... 30 million, 50 million ringgit at the max.
Okay.
Now, that's a drop in the ocean if you look at it in terms of US dollars.
I see.
Right?
Okay.
What can a 30 million ringgit fund invest in? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you don't have enough money in the system.
Okay.
There's money in the country
yes.
with pension funds and all. You know, we have among the biggest pension funds, not just in Asia, but in the world even.
Wow.
Right? But they are not investing in venture capital. Right?
Okay.
And then even with the government-based funds, so
yes.
primarily over the last 20 years, most of the funding has been via the government,
yes.
right?
Correct.
Even for government-based funds, they put too many limitations and too many restrictions.
Okay.
You can't invest in this stage or that stage.
Yeah.
You can't invest out of Malaysia.
Yeah.
It must be 51% Malaysian-owned
okay.
companies. So there are two things. One is helping the entrepreneurs to grow their business.
Yeah.
And the second thing is giving the VCs themselves an opportunity to be successful VCs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have all these limitations that are placed on our local VCs, compared to Singapore VCs who have zero limitations or restrictions, who's going to be successful, right? So you're going to find successful VCs abroad, not in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find more successful companies abroad and not in Malaysia either.
Okay.
So this does not bode well for entrepreneurship in Malaysia. You know, the government has spent billions, right, in promoting entrepreneurship, right down from university level to late stage to, you know, even outside the Klang Valley, right?
Yes.
But there's no point in doing all of this and getting everybody excited, everybody starting companies, and then there's no funding available for them to grow, right? So that's the biggest problem, right? So I also talked about solutions.
Okay.
So
right,
I talked about how can we solve this problem?
Right, the
what's
second
the solution?
Part, yeah.
So second part of my article, right? It was a two-part article.
Yeah.
So the first thing is, you know, the government has been talking about consolidating the venture capital industry. Right. Now, I really think that's a bad idea.
Oh, okay.
What you need is actually more diversity. Mm-hmm. Because you need venture capital companies. They'll be investing at different stages. Some VCs are excited about the early stage. Yeah. Some are a bit more risk-averse. They want later stages. So you need diversity. You need them to be able to invest outside our local geography. Mm-hmm. Right? Because if they invest in the whole region, there's a great opportunity for them to be successful. Mm-hmm. Now, a successful VC will be able to raise a lot more money.
Oh, yeah, next.
Exactly.
Yeah,
next so month. If you look at most of the VCs in Malaysia, they're out there trying to raise money, mm-hmm. but they're struggling to raise money because they have no track record. Mm-hmm. Even if they've been around for 5 years or 10 years, the pension funds will say, show me your track record, mm-hmm. and they don't have a track record. Mm-hmm. Why? Because of all the limitations that we place on them. Because the initial funding itself is very small, right? So we need a lot more diversity. We need to increase the number of VCs,
but
as well as increasing the number of funds, right?
How do we do it? Is it through government funding then? And Lim Guan Eng will be the first one to tell you no money.
Okay. So there are a few ways of doing this, right? The first thing really is, and this is something the government has actually started last year, right? The previous government. There were a lot of discussions that we had with PNB and other GLICs, right, government-linked investment corporations, and they actually finally agreed to put 1 billion ringgit into venture capital.
Okay.
And it was even mentioned in the last budget, last year, right? Now, after it was mentioned in the last budget, the SC, the Securities Commission, because they are the one that look after the VC industry, so they were given the mandate to get proposals so that all the GLICs can invest in all these proposals from venture capital companies and others, right? So the VC did it. There were about 60-odd proposals. 60 over proposals.
A lot of interest.
Okay. Not just locals, but foreigners as well, right? Who want to set up VC funds in Malaysia with this 1 billion ringgit. That's a lot of money, right? 1
Absolutely.
Billion ringgit. Okay. All of this was done. Mm-hmm. Everybody presented to the GLICs, including MBAN, right? So MBAN had a proposal.
Of whom you are the president.
I'm the president of MBAN. So we had a proposal for what we call a sidecar fund. Sidecar fund primarily invests together with other angels.
What is sidecar again?
We call it a sidecar fund.
Side.
S-I-D-E-C-A-R, right? So basically,
sidecar.
Angels will put money into a fund.
Yep.
And this fund will invest with other individual angels. Yeah. So if our proposal was, if three angels put money into a company, the fund will match that.
Okay.
So if three angels say put in 300,000, the fund will put in 300,000. Mm-hmm. So this increases the funding available for entrepreneurs, right?
Okay.
It's been done very successfully in China, in Australia.
Okay. So proven nothing, model. Proven
nothing
model.
New, proven okay. model, right? Our partners were also from Australia, by the way, right? Because they had the expertise.
Okay.
So with the GLIC's 1 billion, can you imagine if these funds were actually allocated? That's adding an extra 1 billion ringgit into the ecosystem.
Sure.
And what if you do matching? So even with our sidecar fund, we were willing to match, right? So if we requested for, say, 50 million, we would match 10 to 20 million. So you are actually increasing the pool again.
The pool,
so can you imagine if 1 billion is there and they say, look, we'll match it 3-1 or something like that. Other people have to put in another 300
million. 333 million,
So now you're increasing it from 1 billion to 1.3 billion. Yeah. The Singapore government has done something like this.
Correct.
Government
they've
funding.
Long ago done matching.
Funds. Right. 10 years ago, they done matching
funds.
They've even done 7-1 matching funds.
Wow. Yeah. You mean $7 from the Singapore government, $1 from
exactly.
Outside fund.
Wow. Exactly, right? Which is why the venture capital hub
Thriving.
Of Southeast Asia is in Singapore, right? Now, we can do that with this 1 billion ringgit. So I think this is something the new government must implement because we have done all the groundwork already. All the presentations were done. So we should implement that, right?
And the money is there, right, from the
agencies. So the money is being allocated by the pension funds and the agencies, right? So we've got Khazana, PNB, KWAP, Tabung Haji, right? So they are willing to put in this money.
But you're saying that to tweak it, to say that this 1 billion should be a matching, matching fund where, 1 to 3, right? So it means try to increase the pool size by 333.
Whether it's 1 to 3 or 1 to 4, it doesn't matter, right? As long as you do matching.
Okay.
Because you want the VC funds that want to do this to have some skin in the game, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to take the 1 billion, you put some money as well.
Yeah.
So that will actually be fantastic, right? The second thing was the corporate investment tax incentive.
Okay, yes.
So the late Nazrin and I pushed for this for 5 years, right?
Oh, okay.
And finally, last year was approved. And what this means
announced in the budget also?
It was announced in the budget.
Okay,
it was announced in last year's budget, right? So what this means is if a corporation invests or puts in 10 million, 20 million ringgit per year into a venture capital fund, they will get a tax credit for that.
Okay.
So they can write it off the tax immediately.
What percent is the tax credit? The full amount?
The full amount of the 20 million, right? So if you have a 25% tax, you're actually making 25% already immediately.
Wow.
And you can do that for 5 years. That's 100 million additional money
just
into the ecosystem from one organization.
Yeah.
And I know companies like Sunway and all were happy to do that.
Mm.
So I think this is the second one that we really need to implement.
Okay.
Now, if you look at it, there's money in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
The policies are already there. It just needs to be implemented.
Yeah.
If we can do this, we can improve the amount of... We can increase the number of VCs in the ecosystem. We can improve the increase the number amount of money in the ecosystem. And this is what this ecosystem really needs.
And
it needs more money, more VCs, more people really doing what they are good at.
Okay, so, I mean, the action is there for the government to take, right? No need to plan anything strategically. This is a low-hanging fruit, right?
Exactly.
Then you can discuss other things subsequently. Okay?
Exactly. Of course, you know, the 8 other initiatives that are proposed, right? So,
I mean, everybody has to read those 2 articles. Highly recommend. I think I wrote that this is a cheat sheet.
Yes.
If you want to be a quasi-expert in the venture capital industry of Malaysia, bookmark and keep those 2 articles. You will never go wrong. People think you're a real expert in the venture capital industry.
And that's 20 years of experience from me there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks a lot, Siva.
Thank you very much, Karan.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.